Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. More things keep pouring into my mind about that fight, Jake. So before we move on, the other elephant in the room about the Ryan Garcia-Devin Haney fight is that Devin Haney drained himself to make 140, and Ryan Garcia did not. And so and people say, well, it was only 3.5 pounds. That's a world of difference because he did not have to dehydrate himself, starve himself, and drain himself to make 140.
He's actually doing the opposite at the weigh-in.
He can't make 140 anymore.
He's hydrating himself.
Right, but that was the ceremonial weigh-in. They do the actual weigh-in earlier in the day.
Right.
So once he gets on there, he's already weighed in.
The fact he was drinking beers.
Right. But that's after they had already started to rehydrate. But a lot of people said Haney didn't look good at the weigh-in because he had really strained to make 140. When a fighter doesn't have to do that, there's a long history, all right? The rematch between Diego Corrales and Jose Luis Castillo that they referenced, Castillo knocked him out with one punch because he came in stronger and better and more hydrated. When Floyd Mayweather beat Juan Manuel Marquez, he came in several pounds overweight and paid Marquez $600,000 to go on with the fight. And that's what happened here. They ended up getting close to $1 million, Devin Haney's camp, from Ryan Garcia's camp to go on with the fight, even though Ryan Garcia didn't make weight. And because he didn't make weight, he didn't win the title. And so Haney is still the champ. You have to make weight to fight for the title. And so that was a huge advantage. And he was bigger than Haney in the ring. Now, Haney agreed to it. He could have said, nope, no fight. But guess what? He wanted $1 million, and he wanted to make the money, and he wanted to go on with the fight. That's up to their camp. And so once you get in the ring, you've already agreed to it, then you can't complain about it. But it was a factor. Some people thought maybe, well, he didn't train at all. That wasn't the case. It was calculated. And so credit Ryan Garcia for being willing to give up a portion of his purse. But that just shows also a big win like that can mean more than a title. Because now no one's talking about who has the title. Everyone's talking about who won the fight.
Yeah, and I imagine the mental energy that you have to put into cutting weight. I mean, that can be stressful and straining. And that's energy that Ryan Garcia didn't have to exude. And Haney did.
Right.
That's just another edge.
He won't be able to do that, forever, because then guys won't fight him. And so he's got to come in moving forward, certain guys.
I mean, I imagine if that happens in the future, a guy would just say, no, I'm not fighting him.
Right. Well, we'll
see. Tough to do that
right.
Late
game. Right. Well, Haney wanted that payday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So now we have Scott Carroll in studio, former Major League pitcher, Liberty native, now working closely with Jake Gutierrez in a search for a home. Is that right?
That's right. Good
morning,
guys.
Why do you smile whenever I say that?
It brings me joy.
Yeah.
It does.
We have back and forth. We are on the phone over the weekend. It's nice.
He made weight, by the way. We weighed him.
Does that bring you joy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Being on the phone with him?
It brings me a lot of joy.
And tell people again how they can get a hold of you if they would like.
Yeah, appreciate that. But, yeah, again, I'm licensed in both Kansas and Missouri, and 816-304-4068 or 913-320-0076. And would love to help you in this market. It's definitely competitive.
Are we to the point now where Jake is neither licensed in Kansas or Missouri officially?
I'm private.
Oh, yeah, private. That's right.
Everything that's exactly stays right. In the private.
Well, we saw the Royals lose 2 out of 3 to the Baltimore Orioles. And look, I don't think it's any reason to panic. What I just said was, okay, we see how much better they are than the White Sox. Okay, that's good. So now we know they're better than the worst team in baseball. But now we're also seeing that they're not as good as the Orioles. And that's okay, too. They weren't supposed to be. The Orioles are one of the better teams in the league. They were a playoff team last year. They have an unbelievable collection of young talent. They went out and traded for Corbin Burns, but they have great young position players. And this is a team that is likely headed back to the playoffs. And so, and look, have the Royals just been blown out of the water against them? No. They lost 2 out of 3 in Baltimore where the bullpen blew it. They lost 2 out of 3 here at home where the offense was inconsistent. They did find themselves down big when Cole Reagans got rocked, but the offense fought their way back, so that was impressive. But they lost. And so you step back now, 6 games against the Orioles. They're not quite as good as the Orioles, but the gap isn't huge. There's a gap, but it's not huge. And so it's all right. The Royals aren't the best team in baseball. The Royals aren't the best team in the American League. All of these things could be true, along with the fact that they are still dramatically better than last year, but we're starting to see how much more they need to go to get to being a playoff contender, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I went with my family on Saturday night to watch that game, and it was a really good second half of that game to come back. But, yeah, there's that Orioles lineup is very, very talented. They weren't missing a lot of pitches versus Reagans, and they made him pay for quite a few pitches that he left over the zone. And it's just interesting that, you know, that these games, it felt like in the stands that it was very meaningful. And you could tell that the fans really, really wanted that game and have you know, high passions already early on. But, yeah, I think it's a good just barometer. But this next series coming up versus the Blue Jays is a good one to turn the page and get back on track. And they're still 13-9, so they're still, you know, playing good baseball. And these types of things are going to happen. But I think they're in a good position.
I asked you something about Saturday before we kind of talk about what's moving forward. You know, Reagans was obviously one of the best pitchers the Royals have going for them, and he'd been their ace. And I think you don't expect him to go out and get shelled. And it was line drives. And it wasn't like bombs, home runs and stuff. They were just – he was in the bad part of the zone. They were right. Hitting the ball hard off of him. But it looked a little bit like you have to be prepared for everything, but maybe they weren't prepared for that to happen because it took them a little while to get somebody up in the bullpen and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a little shocking for the whole staff probably to have that happen to Cole.
I think you're kind of right. And I also think that they were just hoping because a lot of those hits came with 2 outs. Mm-hmm. So I think they were just like, man, get this last out, get us back in here, get this last out, get us back in here. But the inning just kept dragging on. And I'm not sure how many pitches he threw. I think close to 50 pitches maybe in that one inning.
Yeah.
And it was taxing for sure. And so finally, when they had to get him out of there, but yeah, what I noticed when I saw him, his stuff is still very, very good. But like at the big league level, when they can eliminate some pitches, and I felt like the Orioles could with that lineup, they were able to eliminate a breaking ball from him because he wasn't throwing it deep in the counts. It was either fastballs or changeups, and so they were able to capitalize on a lot of those fastballs that were in the zone.
Yeah, the Orioles, yeah, you look up. I went out there yesterday, and we were sitting as fans, kind of watching it, and I hadn't watched a lot of Orioles baseball. I know they won 100 games last year.
Yeah.
But that lineup, it's you look up and down the line, big, strong, athletic,
yeah.
You know, both sides of the plate, everything to them. That's a tough lineup to get through. I'm like Steven a little bit. They lost 4 out of 6, but I thought for the most part, yesterday was, even though it was 5-0, you know, it was 2-0 for quite a while.
A lot of chances.
Competitive enough. So the Royals are kind of right there on that, but they don't look the same. The Royals lineup doesn't look like their lineup.
Yeah.
It's a different deal.
Well, and you got to go back a little bit. The Orioles have been bad for a while, so mm-hmm. they were drafting at number one or number two for the last 5 to 7 years, so they were getting some studs.
But they hit on the picks.
Exactly right. So you got to give them you know, a testament to that. But like they are getting dudes out of the draft, and they're hitting on those. So those guys do look different because they're 1-1, 1-2 guys. And so their lineup is, excuse me, is very, very good. And it's going to be going to be a problem.
We'll ask about Jackson Holliday because he's the one guy who hasn't hit yet. You know, he didn't play Saturday because he was, guess, 1 for whatever coming in, and they pulled him out with the bases loaded on Friday. This kid's going to be a star, they think, mm-hmm. right? But he's 20 years old.
Yeah.
He earned his way to the major leagues because he was killing it at the minor league level. What do you think is going through his head at this point? This is a kid whose dad played for years in the major leagues. I mean, he knows the game.
Yeah.
But what's it like, do you think, for him to sit here and now he's down to 0-2 something because he didn't get any, he got a walk yesterday or a field of choice at the very end yesterday. What's it like for a young player, 20 years old, to be up here at the major leagues and struggling like that?
Yeah, so I've never been in that position, but what I could probably say is that there's a lot of weight on him for being in this position, but I think he has really, really good, surrounding family and coaches that are talking to him. But it is probably weighing on him a little bit, and it's tough when you see those results because he wants to do well. You obviously he's talented enough to be successful at this level, but it just shows you that no matter how good you are in the minor leagues, it doesn't indicate that you're going to be, a star as soon as you hit the big leagues. It's a different level, and guys execute at such a higher level, and he just goes to show that even a young talent's going to struggle a little bit.
Yeah, it's tough. We're sitting there watching him, and he did a nice job in the field yesterday, so it wasn't affecting me everywhere. But I can't imagine what it's like to try to get through that. And they're not expecting much of him. They had him batting ninth, right?
Right.
But it was like home run. He's coming up. It's out. At some point, you probably just like, he got his day off, and I don't know if they're going to send him down or something. At some point, you probably got to go give him some confidence or something. But,
yeah,
man, that's a tough spot. I don't feel bad for the Orioles that he's not coming up raking like everyone else is, because they might be unbelievable if he came up and was doing that. But just getting called up in that lineup is pretty nice accomplishment for him. But 20 years old is something to be at the big leagues.
And also, with the Orioles, there's something to the idea that he doesn't have to come up and be the savior.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so maybe they can just kind of let him work his way into it. Because he's going to be a stud.
Yeah.
Many people are that swing and everything else. Mikel Garcia, I feel like this is going to be a breakout year for him. I'm not going to give up on that. But he's struggling mightily. When you have a guy that's struggling to this point, is it best just to let it roll? He's still a young player. There's at least been talk about, should they drop him down in the lineup so he's not hitting leadoff right now to let him try to figure some things out. And maybe there's no one right way to handle it. All players are different. But what do you think? The offense is inconsistent. He's struggling. He's hitting leadoff. Do you do something or just let it go?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've been pondering that, and I was thinking that just watching the game Saturday night. I was trying to think, who do you guys think could slide into that one spot? That's what I was even trying to think about.
There's not a lot of choices. That's the problem.
Exactly. So I was thinking, they're kind of thinking about that, but you do want to start to see more production from that leadoff spot. And granted, we're still only 23 games in. But, you want to start seeing a little bit more production, even just kind of maybe more efficient at-bats. And I think overall playing the game hard, too. I think just – There were a ton of fans that were a little ticked off when he didn't run out that ball on Saturday night when it hit the pitcher in the back.
Right.
And he just gets, could have been safe if he just continued to play hard. But, it'll be interesting. I think they're probably going to ride it out a little bit longer, but they're going to, it's going to come soon where they're going to need to see a little bit more production from that one spot.
They need more production from offensive production from center field. I think Michael Massey's going to come up and give them more production at second base. But they need more production at third base. Renfro, even though he had a home run the other day, he's been struggling. Melendez is coming back to earth. We're going to see.
And they pinch hit for Melendez yesterday.
Yeah. There's some issues right now with the consistency in the offense. One thing, I'm glad you were there on Saturday so I could ask you about this. So that's they were giving out the rings, the replica rings, which that's like one of the coolest giveaways that I've seen.
Yeah.
Was it replica 2014 ALCS rings?
Mm-hmm.
And Alex Gordon was there to throw out the first pitch.
My mother-in-law got a ring, so she was like, "Did you get one?" I was like, "No, we were a little too late."
But it nice?
Yeah,
huh?
I put it on. It had a little weight to it. There's some quality to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the question I have, because you were pitching – in that era, right? And I've even caught myself saying, well, maybe this year is like 2013 for the Royals, and this is just the prelude to, okay, then 2014, then next year will be when they really compete or whatever else. When you think back to those Royals, and also, Eric Hosmer, ladies and gentlemen, has become a must-follow on Twitter. Let me give you an example. They didn't even tag him, but someone was talking about the Boston Red Sox here and just made this point. If pitching coaches had war, Dave Bush to Andrew Bailey is like swapping out Eric Hosmer for Barry Bonds. They didn't tag Eric Hosmer.
He's out there searching.
Eric Hosmer, apparently searching, responded, yeah, And if your aunt had balls, she'd be your uncle. hey, Haas, I don't know if this is the time where you bring that up, but that's fine. Jake, a round of applause for Eric Hosmer getting salty with people about bringing his name into conversations with the Boston Red Sox. This guy's getting after it on Twitter. But anyway, when you think back to those teams, the identity to me, number one, was one of the best bullpens I'll ever see in my life. Maybe the best bullpen I'll ever see in my life. And then a team that was loaded with tremendous athletes and guys that put the ball in play.
Right.
That could wreak havoc on the base paths, and they could play great defense.
Yep.
So when you think back, is that what made those couple of years so great for the Royals?
Well, let me remind you. So I was pitching against them,
right?
But I was focusing on trying to get them out, and we were doing our own thing. But yeah, I was very aware of how good their lineup was. Like you mentioned, like athleticism, that's what speaks out. Like putting the ball in play, the bullpen was outstanding. So from my standpoint, facing that lineup, they had a good mix of righties and lefties.
So you have a great perspective on this.
Yeah.
Like who was the toughest guy for you to face in that lineup?
So Kane was tough, and then also Hosmer, because his swing was long. And so he could reach a lot of pitches, but Kane had a great job of fighting pitches that were inside on him on a righty-righty matchup. But those two guys were really tough. And so from throughout that lineup, athleticism, putting the ball in play, not striking out a ton, and that, I think that's what's changed a lot too, just like you asked about identity. Like that team wasn't afraid to just put the ball in play and move runners, but also just put the ball in action because the athleticism, they could run, they could make things happen on the base paths. They force you to kind of press the issue and make you have to make good plays against them. So top to bottom, yeah, the lineup was really tough to face because how athletic they were and being able to put the ball in play.
And you knew when they got to the bullpen, the game was likely over because the bullpen was so damn good.
Right. Yeah, I mean, those studs, those three guys were incredible to watch, but also the tough to face.
Yeah, the Royals back then, putting the ball in play was a big deal. A lot of people, there's more than one way to go have success. It's a lot of the analytics or stuff, you know, get walks and, you know, force pitchers to go deep. The Royals swing, but they weren't swing and miss a lot. That was a big deal. And when they got on the base pass, whether they were on the base pass to start the play or, you know, just taking the extra base on a mm-hmm. ball that was kind of in the gap or whatever, they really put pressure on defenses.
Or Dyson was on base.
And I
base.
See some of that. With this year's team, they got to put the ball in play a little bit more. But like Bobby Witt is always looking for the next base.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of stuff makes the other team have to go out and make a play they don't really want to make. I mean, you practice all these things. You throw the ball to the right cutoff man or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they would, back then, you know, they would get on base and they would make those kind of plays. That makes it harder to do the rest of the stuff for the other team. But the problem this team has right now is, I mean, that lineup they put out there yesterday, you got like five guys batting under 200.
Yeah.
And that's just not going
to
work.
No, exactly. To your point, when you said you looked up and down the Orioles line, you look up and down that lineup, they're like hitting in the high 200s, 300s, like several guys in the 300s. So it's just it's different when you compare the two. But I think the backbone of this team will still be pitching. I really do believe that. I think, you know, you have the starters that are going to continue to give you quality innings, give you a chance to win. And then I'll tell you what, you got to tip your cap to the bullpen on Saturday night, too, to go out there and give them quality innings,
right.
to not kill the bullpen any further to use arms, but to keep the team in the ballgame, to have a chance to tie and win. I think that was really cool. And to be honest, I that was the first game I've been to this year, but it just felt like when I was the crowd when Salvi hit that home run on Saturday night was pretty intense, and the fans were going crazy. So there's just, you can tell there's a strong yearning for, you know, good quality baseball, and I think we're going to continue to see that this year.
Okay, yeah, 23,000 people Saturday, and that was a little disappointing part. They'd come out there because I think fans are buying in a little bit. The weather's warming up and all that, and you know, it was the giveaway night, and the ace was on the hill, and you come out there and it's like, he gives.
I think a bunch of them showed up downtown. There's no stadium. So when you look,
not ready yet.
I know, never will be. Now, when you look at this team, that was my next question. When this team becomes what it wants to be, then what will their identity be when they maximize what this is?
Yeah, that's a really good question too, because they have the capabilities to put a lot of runs on the board, and they make teams pay for their mistakes, because you saw the Orioles boot the ball around a little bit, and the Royals are able to advance and score runs. But I think I'll go back to pitching. They're going to be strong pitching, and that starting unit's going to give them a chance to win every night. And I think as they settle in throughout the year, they're going to be a team that has to still grind out more wins than not. And so, you know, playing sound baseball, not making mistakes, having quality pitching in the bullpen as well. So winning those tough, you know, one-run ball games, which they've done so far quite a bit. But it's not going to be a team, I think, offensively that's going to just, you know, overpower you, as we've seen so far.
It's interesting because, like, the difference is those Royals teams had a lot of good players. And Lorenzo Cain, 1 year, finished third in the MVP. He was a really good player. But they didn't have a superstar-level player like Bobby Witt Jr.
Right.
who could end up being a perennial MVP candidate, mm-hmm. who might already be there, right?
Right.
And so there's, you know.
Well, Salvi's up there this year, too.
Right.
Like what
oh, boy,
doing.
Salvi's. This bat is incredible.
Yeah.
But Bobby Witt Jr. can do it all, mm-hmm. right? And so it'll be interesting because baseball is so different than other sports. It's hard for one superstar player to carry a team to postseason success. Ask Mike Trout.
Yeah.
He's been, for so long, he's been the best player of his generation, and it hasn't equaled postseason success. So you have to have other guys, but this team's different because they have a true superstar on Bobby Witt Jr. And I'm going to be curious to see how they go about surrounding him with the right kind of, I mean, because even the Angels had Ohtani too.
That's exactly
and they
right.
still can. So it's like you had two generational talents. And they screwed it up because they could never get enough pitching. They could never get the bullpen right. They could never supplement those two superstars with the right amount of talent. And so that's the task of J.J. Piccolo now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I think, to your point, it's going to come. I know it's really tiring to hear, but the pitching is going to – this is a great series to look at as far as can the pitching just pick the team up and just say, listen, we'll carry us through this next four or five games and get us through here so we can get back on track.
I want to mention that tonight, Jake, I don't know if you've been paying attention to this, but I sure have. It's the Comets in action tonight, playoff action. How about that? The Comets are playing in the Eastern Conference Finals tonight at home against Milwaukee. With a win, they advance to the MASL, the MASL Championship. The game's at 6:30. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com or TicketsForLess.com. The Comets are up 1-0 in the best-of-three series. They have won 9 in a row. And you can listen to the game tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So if you want to have some fun, go to Tickets for Less or go to Ticketmaster and go to the game tonight between the Kansas City Comets and the Milwaukee Wave. A spot in the Ron Newman Cup Final is on the line. And then if you can't get out there, you can listen to it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You'll love this one. Scott Carroll's asking about Ryan Garcia. He goes, could they ever get Ryan Garcia to fight Terrence Crawford? And I said,
no.
Ryan Garcia and all of his fans don't want nothing to do with that.
You don't want that.
But
you don't
I'd love it. But it would be, no, let me tell you something. It would be smart for Terrence Crawford because there are very few opponents that could bring those type of pay-per-view numbers with them. And that type of fan. Absolutely. But there's levels to this. And it's like there's only a few that are just like so elite. Like Terrence Crawford, he could end up being the best fighter of his generation when it's all said and done. He might be.
Yeah.
He's that good. He's unbelievable.
And then Logan Paul is going to try and ask to fight him, right?
Right.
Sure.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Some of you wear gloves. You have to wear a glove on your right hand, but not your left hand.
You have to wear a full football helmet. And we'll move on.
I hope Tyson just wears him out and just knocks him out.
I don't know, man. Just I need see, that's, there's so many. Like, I need to know what size gloves they're wearing. Yeah. I need to know how long the rounds are.
Does
are
Logan
they,
Paul, is he wearing headgear?
Jake Paul or Logan Paul?
Which one? Who's fighting?
Logan Paul's was in WrestleMania. Jake Paul's boxer, yeah.
So Jake Paul, but he's wearing headgear, though.
I don't know. They won't say.
They won't say.
Is Crawford going to rematch Spence?
Spence? Well, I mean,
Earl
Spence? I mean, I don't. I don't understand. What's the point? Like, I guess. I mean, that was so such a one-sided.
I mean, that's why I was surprised how one-sided it was.
Crawford was gonna fight Tim Zhu, but he got upset by Fedora. And so I think he's taking a fight in Saudi Arabia, and then
because I thought that was going to actually be a decent fight.
Yeah, I think Errol Spence might fight Fedora, the big 6'7" kid that upset Tim Zhu. It was going to be a great fight, but I picked Crawford.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I thought Crawford would win, but I thought I'd be like, okay, well, here's a test.
Here's
Crawford
problem.
Is like no test.
Errol Spence flipped his Lamborghini. And had facial fractures and had to have surgery. He had a torn retina and had to have surgery. Mm-hmm. He has had
it didn't sound great for boxing.
No. He likes to party. Mm-hmm. Terrence Crawford trains
all the time.
And then when he's not training, he trains more.
Right.
And then he trains a little bit more, right? There are some people that have said that Errol Spence was partying 2 days before the fight, a day before, there's some people that say he was high in the ring, whatever.
Taking it very seriously.
Well, Terrence Crawford beat his ass, and that's it.
I mean, Crawford's
and
looking
I like
for a
Spence.
Challenge. I mean, would he ever step up to Canelo?
They've talked about that, sure.
That would be amazing.
It would be a catch weight, you know, but they've talked about that. But there's other – I like your idea. If you're talking about making money and capitalizing on this opportunity, absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
It would be a great watch, but I would feel really bad for Ryan Garcia. Cause,
would you? Yeah. He's egotistical. I bet he thinks he could go in there just.
Oh, sure he does.
Sure he could.
Sure he does. But I like Ryan Garcia, and he would be, that would be an ass.
There's nobody that I would pick over Terrence Crawford.
Yeah.
Unless he fought Canelo, and Canelo's bigger and everything else. I'd have to.
And you drug tested Canelo.
Right. I have to
Don't bring that up.
I need to know what the catch weight is, though. You know, that's the whole thing. Weight is so important in boxing. People don't get it. It's so important. And so if it's is the catch weight 160? Is it 164? I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Okay, so moving on. Now the Royals take on the Blue Jays. Are we getting back to the starting pitching? Are we worried about the starting pitching at all? What we've seen, or is this just things, even you know, regression and things are evening out now?
Yeah, I think this is just kind of the ebbs and flows of baseball season. But yeah, with Singer going tonight, he's been throwing the ball really well. He's 2-0 so far. I think you know that's all you can ask. You got a great pitcher taking the bump that's going to give you a chance to win. And you know the Blue Jays are a good team, but they're not lighting the world on fire. They're just I think slightly above 500. But it'll be a really good test and. Get them back on track and just take it, I think the biggest thing is just as Kansas City fans, we want them to do so well, but we just kind of need to ease our expectations just a little bit, remember what they were last year, but also have an opportunity to be pretty good this year.
Alec Marsh has been good.
He's been awesome. I've been very impressed with him.
What impresses you about Alec Marsh?
I think just, his competitiveness and his ability to locate pitches. And I saw something where he was, tied for eighth fastest to 100 strikeouts in minimal innings. So that was pretty cool. He just the way he's able to throw a lot of his pitches for strikes, he competes. He's a big kid too. So, I mean, he's running his fastball up there, 94, 95. But, he's had some success. And I think he's kind of finding out the more success you have at that level too, it breeds more confidence. So I'm excited to see what can continue from him.
Because that's the real key here, to me at least. When you talk about sustainability for a small market team, if you look at Cleveland especially and Tampa, they are able to develop starting pitching mm-hmm. on a consistent basis. And even though we've loved seeing what Lugo has done, we've loved seeing what Waka has done, it's hugely important for this team to be able to have Brady Singer and Alec Marsh in this rotation successful as homegrown starting pitchers, and we need to see more of it because it's not sustainable to go out and spend all that money like they did on Waka and Lugo every year.
Right? Yeah, exactly right. And that's I think where you have good seasons in these ball clubs where these homegrown talents and these guys that they've developed have over exceeded their expectations, but pitched well to where it gives them the opportunity to continue to use them in the starting rotation and not have to go out and buy
are trying to obtain any arms from free agency, because that is pretty costly.
Because that's what drives me crazy about watching Cleveland. You get a guy hurt, then they call up a guy, and they keep it going. The depth of the starting pitching. The same thing with Tampa, which also allows you to make deals, right? And to be able to use, as Dayton Moore once said, pitching is the currency of baseball.
It forever will be, especially.
Well, it's a stretch for them here. Obviously, they had the White Sox in all those games at the beginning, but they also had three off days in the first 3 weeks, starting Friday when they started this homestand. They don't have an off day until May 2nd, so they only have basically one off day the entire month. If you go from the 19th to the 15th of May, only one off day. That's when it really starts piling up, the grind of baseball.
Right.
They build these off days into April because of weather, and there'll be plenty of more off days later in the year. They're off on a lot of Mondays. But this stretch they have right now, they got four against the Blue Jays, and they go right on the road, and they play the Tigers, and they go right to Toronto, and they play that. This is where you better be able to keep pitching and keep going deeper into games so your bullpen doesn't get stressed out like we've had seen a lot of bullpen stuff happen this past homestand. That grind is the really hard part of baseball, especially when it's hard. No team can just throw out there and make it easy all the time. It's going to be especially tough for a team who's trying to keep their head above water during a stretch like this.
Absolutely, yeah. You bring up a really good point. This is where, good to, middle-of-the-road teams can really just continue to work off of that consistency. Having that starting five go out there and pitch and give them a chance to win, but work through, hey, we're not going to have our best stuff every game, but how can we grind out games, another identity piece for them, and try and manufacture runs or do whatever it takes to win these close ball games. Because to your point, this next stretch could be just a good pivot for where this season could go heading into May, because we're still just 1 month into the season. So this is, luckily they've been above 500 right now, but if you play 500 ball now until, end of May, you're in a great, great shape. Like, that's what's cool about baseball, is like you don't have to win every game, but if you're 500, you have an opportunity to play postseason baseball.
Well, in this stretch, they're gonna play Texas at home in a little while. So I think Toronto is the team you're going to play seven times in a stretch, and this is the team that's similar in the standings.
Yeah.
This is where you gotta. We'll see what you are. Can you go over 500 against the Blue Jays? Then I think you'll feel pretty good about being at 500 or better at the end of this stretch, because they are done with the Orioles at this point now, but the Rangers are the defending champs. That's a good team, and we'll see. And like we said, they've done okay against the Orioles this year.
Yeah.
The good part this year so far is, they haven't been swept. They win a game. They got swept so many times the last few years, and then you get swept two series in a row, and all of a sudden you're just like, oh my gosh, how are you going to handle this?
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I was driving in. I was like, that last year just there were so many 5, 6, 7 game losing streaks, where this year the starting rotation is just so much more effective and able to pitch that they can give themselves opportunities to break those, not have those streaks of 3, 4, 5 losses and get back on track. So I think that's what's gonna be the difference this year for sure.
All right, this gets people going. This gets people's juices flowing. So I want to ask you this. You mentioned Salvador Perez, right?
Yeah.
Salvi can swing it, baby.
How old is he? He's been playing for like 30 years, it feels
about,
like.
Yeah. I mean, he came up in 11, I think, maybe?
Right.
10 or 11.
I mean, God, when he gets a hold of one, baby.
Yeah.
And so I saw Nick Capel, or was it Nick Capel?
Nick.
All right, Nick.
I think it's Capel.
Tweeted out about Salvador Perez last week. And then this started all these people debating all this, right? Salvador Perez, he's over 250 home runs now.
Wow.
8-time All-Star. 5-time Gold Glove winner. 4-time Silver Slugger winner. Now, the Gold Gloves first awarded in 57. Silver Sluggers first awarded in 1980 for the best offensive player at each position. The only other primary catcher in Major League history to match those benchmarks, Hall of Famer Ivan Pudge Rodriguez, my favorite catcher of all time. Now, you also add in a World Series MVP, mm-hmm. which means something, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Is Salvi, do you think when it's all said and done, he'll be a Hall of Famer?
I do. I really do. You just spoke to
didn't even hesitate,
no,
Todd.
No, I think just the longevity, you know, you talk about the length, because I think that's what, you know, a lot of baseball writers look at, too, is how long you play and your consistency throughout the length of your career and what he's been able to do. And it seems like he's hitting the fountain of youth recently, too, with just his production. The bat is even more powerful these past few seasons with his home runs. So, yeah, I do believe he'll be a Hall of Famer, and he's had an incredible career.
I think the litmus test for that, there aren't, you know, hundreds of catchers in the Hall of Fame. That's not the way it works, right? I think the litmus test that we're going to probably look at is see what happens with Yadier Molina. I think Salvi, I mean, has way more home runs. But and if you look at the little nitty-gritty stuff like WAR, Molina's WAR is 42, which is a pretty low WAR number for a career for the Hall of Fame, but it's a catcher. It's a different thing. Salvi's sitting at 34 right now in his WAR. Now, that number can obviously go up. It can also come down. That it's not like home runs where they don't ever go down. WAR can – you can minus WAR yourself to somewhere else. But Molina was Gold Glove, all that kind of same kind of things, but he's not the hitter. He's a one-time Silver Slugger guy, not a five-time Silver Slugger guy. Won a couple of World Series, did those kind of things. He will be a litmus test, I think, on that front for Salvi. But if Salvi continues like he's already this year, who knows where it's going to end up, he's already got 1.2 WAR this year. Now, if you play like that all year long, he's going to have like a 5 WAR season as a 33-year-old, almost 34-year-old catcher.
Right.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And he missed an entire year with the Tommy John surgery as well. But he amazes me, man. He really does. And, you know, at the time when they signed him to the long deal, we're like, man, is this the guy you want to sign? But they're giving him his days. He plays first. He plays DH, you know, mostly DHing on his half days off. He is the fountain of youth is working with him, man. And he works hard. He loves baseball. He loves to freaking play baseball. And if he keeps going, I'd put him in the Hall of Fame.
How many home runs does he end up with?
Well, he's 250 now.
Is it 11 seasons in the major league?
Yeah, 13 years.
The whole year without, and, you know, his first year,
he's got 252.
Yeah.
He's 34 years old.
34. I mean, I don't think he's going to get to 400, but he's going to be over 300.
Let's say 317.
For sure.
Yeah. 317, a very specific number. Yeah. What do you say, Todd? And we'll keep track of this.
318. I mean, he hit 20-some last year. You know,
23.
He's going to be a 20-homer guy.
He's hit 23 each of the last 2 years.
Yeah, he's going to get over 300 home runs.
He's already got six.
Yeah, heck of a benchmark for sure. But, I mean, how many catchers are in the Hall of Fame?
Well, just going off the numbers that you're saying, Stephen, those accolades, that if Pudge Rodriguez is the only other guy to have those, I think you can throw WAR out the window for me sometimes. It's just look at those actual, you know, achievements.
And the World Series MVPs, that's the icing on the cake.
I think that we judge everything by championships and how you've done in championships. And for him to go to two World Series, win one, and have an MVP in the World Series, that's monumental for staking his claim.
And as you said, some of those things weren't there. Like Johnny Bench, they didn't have Silver Slugger. He probably would have won it like 8
times.
Sure.
17,
like
Todd. 17 catchers.
17 catchers. I'm looking at the list right here. I mean, Johnny Bench, Yogi Berra. I mean, Roger Bresnahan. Some old guy hit 26 home runs. Okay, whatever. Roy Campanella was an MVP, all that. Gary Carter wasn't.
He's the kid.
2,000 hits, 324 home runs, but he was New York. You know, won a World Series.
You know what's
going
to help
that?
Salvi? And this is sad to say this, but it's true. The smile.
Oh, yeah.
His demeanor, his personality.
Well, baseball
Everyone
writers.
Loves him. People love him.
Yeah.
Right?
They care about that. So baseball
you know
writers,
that.
Yeah. They're humans. They want to be attached to something like that, for sure.
But, you know, I remember talking to Ned about this. I mean, Ted Simmons finally got in. Ted Simmons was a great catcher, underrated because he went to a couple different teams, switch hitter. And Ned's like, that's my favorite catcher of all time. He got to back him up when he was in Milwaukee when they made the World Series. But Ted Simmons finally got there, and I don't think Salvi's going to be some first ballot something, but you look at these guys in the Hall of Fame, he's going to be there. Because he's got 1,400 hits right now. If he plays, if he gets to 2,000 hits and 300 home runs and have all these other things going on, it's pretty good, man. Now, Pudge is exceptional. He got almost to 3,000 hits. He got 2,800
Pudge
hits.
Pudge was the best.
Pudge was something, whether he was all Pudge or...
Oh, let me tell you something, man. I took a picture with him, not last year, but the So it's been almost 2 years out at in Lake Tahoe for the American Century Championship. It's almost like, is that Pudge? He's super nice, great guy, but it's just, you know, it's just, it's not.
He's just a little fella?
Is he less than he once was?
Yes.
They say it's not always great to meet your heroes.
Right. Yeah, but I liked it, though. I got to find that picture.
I would think Salvi's going to get to 1,000 RBIs. Got an outside chance to get to 2,000 hits.
You're not answering the question that you're
doing. He's a Hall of
Famer. Joe Mauer just made it in, and it's not like his numbers.
He brings Mauer.
And Joe Mauer ended up not catching a lot.
Right.
Right at the end. He ended up playing a lot of first base.
Yeah.
For his career.
I think that's what's the durability of Salvi to play this long and play catcher. I think that's a pretty important thing too.
Yeah, I wanted to see how many times Joe Mauer, he barely played catcher.
What do you
after
got?
His first 5 years.
So you think he's in?
He's first.
He's
going
to be in.
Yeah, I put him in. Put him in right now.
All right,
he's in
right
my Hall of Fame. And then, you know what? That means more than the other one. Means more than the other one, doesn't it?
Yeah. Do a lot of
I don't actually have a building to house this or anything.
Right.
You know, I don't have any memorabilia, but I'll put him in.
We will take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. John Heyman just tweeted out that Tyler Duffy being promoted by the Royals today to the major leagues.
Roster move. Okay.
Tyler Duffy, 33 years old, was with the Twins in 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, and then had a brief stint with the Cubs. So, you know Tyler Duffy? Ever crossed paths with this guy?
Never crossed paths with Tyler Duffy.
Huh. Well, that's we'll see whose spot that is.
Yeah, who's he going to be taking?
Oh, they're going to need more pitching. So like we said, there's no off days here for a while. You're going to have some guys up.
And they have, the 26 now roster now? 26-man roster?
And then, they had the doubleheader the other day. We can bring the guy up to be there for emergency. There's a lot of things going on with baseball. They've got these little taxi squads that are in town with them. It's a different deal than it used to be.
He's bounced around a lot, looks like, though. Yeah, he's been in the big leagues off and on since 2015. Okay.
Yeah.
What if I ask you what Jason Kendall's WAR was for his career?
Oh, geez.
I don't want to talk to you.
It's 41.7. And he caught a lot. And he doesn't have any of those accolades you're talking about.
That seems skewed for his WAR to be that high. And
he had some really good years early in his career.
And then what's Salvi's?
34.
Right.
Now, Kendall played two more years.
We had to have a conversation about WAR then.
Right.
Sorry. No, Jason Kendall, there was a time he was a stud. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
He could. You know why? Because he was a catcher that could steal some bases for rotisserie baseball, baby.
I'm just looking at the total games caught by catchers, and Joe Mauer didn't even catch 1,000 games because he was basically a first baseman at the end. But Ivan Rodriguez caught 2,400 games at catcher. Salvi's caught so many games. He's half of what Pudge was, and dude caught forever. But Yachty got to 2,100 games caught.
Man, Kendall stole 189 bases in his career.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, when, 1998, listen to this. He hit .327 with a .411 on base, .473 slug, 12 homers, 36 doubles, 3 triples, 75 ribbies, 26 stolen bases, his strikeout to walk, 51 walks, 51 strikeouts. That's a stud.
Yeah. 5.6 WAR that year, Steven. You love WAR.
Well, he was a stud that year.
Yeah.
And he got hit by 31 pitches.
Get on base.
Led the league. The next year, he hit .332 with a .428 on base. I mean, come on now.
Three-time All-Star, but none of the Gold Gloves, none of the Silver Slugger, none of the, the postseason accolades.
No.
Yeah, Salvi is it's weird. It's like I said, man, the catching in the Hall of Fame, there's little different standards and things like that because you can't hold them to the same standard you would hold some position players as far as you got to have 3,000.
He could use another postseason appearance or two. Well, Royals.
How about a complete season like he started this year? A couple of years like that. That would really be something at his age, but
what's the update on Jake's house? What do we got here?
Man, we're working through it. We're working through it. We got a good week coming up. Another thing, too, I want to wish my brother a happy 46th birthday.
46 is a big
one. Jeff's his name. Yeah, Jeff.
Jeff Carroll.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Jeff. Happy 46th. It's all downhill from here, buddy.
ever since I turned 46, everything's going up.
That's right, Todd.
It's going up. The arrow is pointing up.
You gonna show him anything anytime soon?
We're gonna get out this week and
I'm start sending him some stuff to look at.
Yeah, we're on the up and up.
Ideas of like different.
Oh, you have to be specific when you. I'm gonna send him some stuff.
You know?
That can be all kinds of things.
True,
his juice is worth the squeeze.
That's right. Tell people how they can if they want your help in a house search.
Yeah, appreciate it. So the house search, it's definitely competitive out there. 816-304-4068 or 913-320-0076. Appreciate it, Stephen.
That's Scott Carroll.
If you're looking for Jake's help.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's the number for that?
@JakeGoody.
913-318-1810 is the number for that. We'll be right back after this on WHB.